Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 18th, 2005. Today's session is entitled International Travel and Service Opportunities, presented by Anne Basie and Mary Campbell. Let's listen in.
We've met us before. I'm Anne Basie, and I work on the education desk for the Division for Global Mission.
And I'm Mary Campbell. I work for the Latin America team from the Division for Global Mission. And I'm a former missionary, served in El Salvador for 5 years.
So I want to give you sort of an overview of what we're doing this evening and let you know that we are going to do a lot of talking, but you can interrupt any time with questions. And if you're interested in something and you want more information or more details, see us anywhere in the village and we'll fill you in with the particulars. Basically, I want to quickly review a few things we've discussed this week. We have a short video on what is a missionary. Then we will be giving kind of the anatomy of how a job description, an international job position, is developed and what the process is for applying. And we have some handouts that list current openings, and we can talk specifically about different sorts of positions. But what I need to tell you is that hidden in this presentation, which we intentionally called International Travel and Service Opportunities, is the word missionary, which a lot of people don't like. So after our session the other day, some people were mentioning that they'd read Poisonwood Bible. Hands up. Okay. Nobody in the ELCA goes and tells people in Africa that they're planting their beans the wrong way. Gosh, you can just think of scene after scene of the horrible theology in that book. And we're fortunate that, in our church anyway, years and years of, decades and decades of theological development have moved us away from anything that is so horrible. But missionary is still a hard word. We had a whole session last year at our Global Mission event with young missionaries, and one of their main concerns that they were talking about in the plenary in front of 1,000 people was how hard it was for them to serve internationally and be called the word missionary. It can be very difficult. So we will talk a little more about that, but I wanted to just get that on the table and let you know that we've moved a little bit beyond that. Just quickly, we had talked earlier in the week about the new paradigm. It's not that new. Actually, Mary was mentioning it's a sort of an old paradigm that got put away, but has come back. So instead of our being colonial, instead of our changing cultures, instead of our directing mission, things are very difficult, very different, and people who work internationally are working in a different context today. Remember, we all grew up hearing the word mission fields. Kind of politically incorrect today, so don't use it. Most places that we thought of as mission fields when we were young are now autonomous churches that direct their own ministry. And we're not directing it anymore. We're funding it, we're helping to supply people at their invitation, so we're very involved, but we're involved as partners and companions. We're not directing the mission anywhere else. The mission is directed by local leaders, wherever there are international positions. Many years ago, of course, you see pictures of, well, I've got a terrible picture of a missionary in a Model T surrounded by lots of very small, dark children. And you see a lot of pictures that indicate that the missionaries were leading and doing most of the work, and so there were lots of them. Today, there are many fewer missionaries than there used to be because in many cases, in fact, in most cases, missionaries have been replaced by local leaders who have been trained by their churches or through scholarships internationally. We have a large, the ELCA has a large scholarship program that trains leaders from churches around the world. They don't always come to North America even to study. Oftentimes, a pastor from Africa will just go to another country in Africa for international training. So there are seminaries everywhere in the world, universities everywhere in the world, and local leaders, there's a big emphasis on making sure people are trained so people can run their own churches. And wherever we're serving, we're not in charge. When we talk about these job descriptions later, Mary will tell you more about them. The request for positions internationally originates with the companion churches, and they are the ones that direct it. So you may see, for example, somebody who is working in communications for the Lutheran Church of Costa Rica would be called the communications assistant. They would never be called the communications director. So kind of no matter how responsible your work is, the language of your title is always going to sound equal to or a little bit under the local churches because they are actually the supervisors in this case. So that's kind of the basic background of the theology that in which missionaries and international service people work today. Just some quick facts, and then we have a video to show. I mentioned yesterday that there are about 300 people on any given day who are working internationally, therefore considered in our work serving as missionaries. Two of our guests in the village this week are Sarah Padre and Stephen Padre, who we'll talk a little bit later. Stephen worked at Churchwide, and now he works for ACT, Action by Churches Together, which is the large Protestant consortium, which is, finish the sentence. Action by Churches Together, which is?
Global Alliance of Churches and Related Agencies that respond to emergencies and disasters.
Directing tsunami work, for example. And Sarah works for the Lutheran World Federation. And Jerry Baker, who's in the back, was with Lutheran World Relief for a long time. So positions with those organizations, which I hope you can explore, you would be working with those organizations and wouldn't necessarily be considered an ELC missionary. A few other facts before we show the movie. The highest number of people who serve internationally come in two age groups, 20 to 35, 55 to 70. In the middle, mortgages, kids, jobs. There are families who are missionaries, but moving your children at any point, teenage, it's a bigger enterprise if a whole family is serving, but there are plenty who do. Of the people who are working internationally, only 30% are ordained. There are very few positions where someone is actually the kind of missionary that we remember who is doing direct evangelism or serving in a parish, because typically in parishes, the pastors are ordained by their own church. Most pastors who are working around the world are teaching in seminaries or serving in ways that, again, are helping to build up leaders locally. There are, I know on our Africa desk, there are a few missionaries who are really skilled in languages that almost nobody else in the world knows. So they're still there working in their position because their lifetime of cross-cultural knowledge makes them fit for a job that would be really difficult to bring anybody else into. Everybody else serves as teachers, nurses, auditors, computer technicians, librarians, veterans, doctors, you name it, and we'll get to that later. But we do have a short video that was made a few years ago called What is a Missionary? That footage and kind of explains more about the theology of people serving today. And then we'll move into job descriptions. Let's see the one. Thank you. Okay, I'll try that again. There it is. Okay. Where's the picture? Yeah, I don't know. Where's
Thank
the picture?
You. Don't you have to do it back?
Oh, it worked a minute ago. Searching. Good sign.
We were missionaries in Guyana.
No, I saw you.
Yep.
All the Guyanese youth choir. A major mission on the Lutheran Church in Guyana.
More so.
That's how we spread the good news. Lutheran missionaries today share that same gospel. They are givers and receivers. They are servants and companions.
All ELCA missionaries proclaim the gospel as professors, teachers, community developers, social workers, healthcare specialists, and skateboarders, experts in a whole range of fields.
Sacrifice is a word that is sometimes used to characterize missionary service. But I think you'll find that missionaries will describe their work in ways that you might not have imagined. They challenge us to think differently about global missions.
Mary Ann, Tim, and Isaac Stewart serve the International Church of Copenhagen in Denmark. Tim is pastor, while Mary Ann is involved with several ministries. Isaac is along for the ride. Denmark is the home of Hans Christian Andersen and 1.5 million Lutherans. Copenhagen is rich with ethnic diversity, numerous church steeples, and busy streets. Members of the International Church in Copenhagen are from all over the world. In 2002, the ELCA had 17 pastors called to international congregations in cities around the world: Tokyo, Berlin, Geneva, Nairobi, Cairo, San Salvador, and others. Tim and Mary Ann accompany people in Copenhagen through the ministries of ICC.
The International Church of Copenhagen is a congregation that's very multicultural, multi-ethnic. We have folks from over 20 nationalities that come together, but it has a theological church with a Lutheran rudder. Our worship style is generally based on the Lutheran tradition.
I'm originally from the Washington, D.C. area, and we have been in Copenhagen for 2 years now. I think people come to the International Church of Copenhagen looking for English language worship, but I believe they stay at the International Church of Copenhagen because they found a warm community. I have felt very much enriched by being in a close community with people from a variety of different cultural backgrounds.
We moved here from Venezuela and we love the congregation.
In ICC, we have Bible study, we have sister service, we have book club, choir singing, choir rehearsal once a week. And ICC is probably the only English speaking church in Copenhagen that has this widespread activities.
We came to ICC, it was a church where our children felt that they would be happy and relaxed to come every day.
I really praise God for this. It's a gift for me to come to this church. We get together, you know, it shows the oneness, even though we have different group.
The task of sharing God's love, to me, that's the key to mission, is something that we can do wherever we find ourselves. I'm no more answering a faithful call than someone watching this video in Pennsylvania or Minnesota, but have been given a wonderful opportunity to both share and receive God's love in the context of another culture. That's been a real blessing in our life. We operate in a completely different context than missionaries, say, 50 years ago. I think our goals are different and the state of the world is different.
You go into the mission field now with the premise that you're there to grow as well. You're not just bringing the gospel, but you're in the process of engaging this culture and these people that you are being called for in your own faith journey. That not only benefits you personally, but then that's also something that you bring back to your church. The idea of accompaniment, of walking alongside with people is pretty new, but I think that's a powerful paradigm for the mission. The ELCA should support this ministry because it does good mission work in a variety of settings. We feel very supported by the ELCA through Division for Global Mission. Congregation sponsors, they send us notes, they send us packages, they think of us and they're praying for us.
Many ELCA congregations support missionaries like Tim and Marianne. More than 1,900 congregations are involved in the missionary sponsorship program, providing financial resources so we can support more ministries with our companion churches. In Bratislava, Slovakia, missionaries are walking with and working alongside the Evangelical Lutheran Church of the Augsburg Confession. Bratislava lies along the Danube River. It is a city rich with culture, history, and beauty. Suzanne Heaton teaches high school at the Lyceum in Bratislava. Suzanne and 15 other teachers support the current need for teachers in Lutheran high schools in Slovakia. After hearing from Suzanne, perhaps you will consider serving as a global mission teacher.
I'm from a little town in central Pennsylvania called Roaring Spring. I was a shift supervisor at a notebook factory called Roaring Spring Blank Book. After I graduated college, I had loans to pay off and so forth, and finally my college loans were paid off, and the fact that I'd always wanted to do something like this, I began to look for something. I just love it here because the people are friendly and you can really see the kids learning because you can see their progress, and every day I learn something different, not just at school but just being here. I teach first and second year English at the Evangelical Lyceum, which is like 9th and 10th grade in an American high school. The curriculum is set up like an English course in the United States. One of the things that's different from the United States is how old everything is. You know, the castle in Bratislava, which you can see from almost every place in the city, is 1,000 years old. And just walking through Old Town, some parts of Old Town, it's like stepping back in time. There's nothing like it in the United States. In Bratislava, I can literally walk to Austria. I've done it. And Vienna is an hour away. Budapest and Prague are only a couple hours by train. To be able to go to them and see them and experience them, I don't know who wouldn't take advantage of something like that. This is a Christian high school. Some of them have a lot of questions about faith and God, which is good for me to think about too. It kind of clarifies exactly what I believe. And then some of them have insights that they express, and it teaches me things that I had never thought of. I love teaching, and I realized that after I got here, and that's what I want to do now. So I'm going to go home and get certified so that I can teach in a public school in the United States. When I think of missionary, it conjures all kinds of images of, you know, building churches in Africa. And I'm having the time of my life here, you know. My image of a missionary is not at all what I'm doing. This experience has definitely helped me rethink what a missionary is.
There are similarities of living and teaching in the United States and Slovakia, but there are also differences. How much easier it is to give when we learn to receive the gifts of others. That has surely been my experience.
The ELCA has missionaries in England, too. Time for God is a one-year young adult volunteer program. Can you believe it? Buckingham Palace, Whitehall, the River Thames, and Trafalgar Square, while at the same time serving the call. Elena Gaspodarsek is in London, and Brandon Newton in Haywood. They are excited to share their insight and one-year experience in England.
I found out about Time for God getting on the ELCA website one night, and I was interested in that it was for young adults between 18 and 24, which I fit. I was also interested because it was overseas. The timing fit as to when it would leave. So all those things together caught my interest, and I thought about it solidly, I think, for 3 days.
I was attending Wartburg College as a freshman, and then I decided to take a gap year. And one morning, it was in January, I just decided there has to be something more. I have all this potential and all these gifts that I just want to share with the world, but I'm not getting an opportunity to do that. And so I prayed long and hard to God, and lo and behold, here I am.
London is quite busy, but it's fun. There's a lot to see, a lot to experience, just about town, and so I've taken advantage of that quite a bit. Church Army works to combine word and action, so it's a service-oriented program, and there are two hostels and a day center, which is where I work, for homeless women.
Right now, I'm staying in Haywood. It's a very small city, but it has its fair share of big city problems, and Haywood used to be a thriving community. There's several cotton mills. All of the industry is moving out of Haywood. My placement is at Trinity Methodist Church, and the congregation is predominantly elderly, which is why I'm here to help bring back youth, revive the church, so to speak, with more energy and enthusiasm.
If I look at what I'm doing and the reasons I'm here and the work I'm doing, then I can see that fitting into what a missionary is. But most of the time, I just think of myself as a volunteer.
In a typical day, it ranges from buttering toast for a bunch of toddlers to organizing and leading the youth worship, just meeting youth, getting alongside them, playing basketball, playing football, skateboarding, just chatting with them, getting to know them. You're definitely going outside of your comfort zone. You're going to a place that you're not familiar with. And so it challenges you personally to grow up really fast. And it also helps to strengthen you spiritually because, you know, you come over to this foreign place. You don't know anybody, you're scared, and so immediately you turn to the things that you do know, which hopefully is God.
I think I'm receiving so much more than I'm ever giving. So reaching out, serving others in Christ's love, and being empowered by that in the service, in the daily work, that is why you're here.
When you say the word missionary, I think it's kind of a strange word because that makes me feel kind of older and more responsible and mature. I do feel like an evangelist, and that I'm going to a different part of the world and sharing my faith with a different group of people. You can come to England to be a missionary, or you can step outside of your front doorstep and be a missionary, and that a missionary is to live out a Christian faith and to lead by example.
I don't think I could go throughout this year without developing incredible leadership skills. And I think all volunteers are learning those skills in whatever place they're in.
Definitely going to take back a restored, a renewed passion for living, and a renewed passion for living for Christ. You know, since I'm a volunteer, I don't get wages, but I definitely get paid with smiles or hugs, and occasionally an elderly lady will stick some chocolate in my backpack, and she'll say, and then walk off. And so you can definitely measure your success.
Brandon leaves us with an interesting challenge. How does a missionary measure success? Measure? I don't think so. But give thanks for the incredible privilege of participating in God's global mission and pray for faithfulness to follow.
Well, I think the whole point of this video is to kind of take us away from looking at, you know, the traditional places of service and to open up our vision to other opportunities that exist for us to serve in the world as missionaries. I think, you know, we all, I certainly as a missionary was uncomfortable when I first was, you know, when people start calling me a missionary. I got into this, I was one of those gap people that she says that there aren't very many of them. I went into it in my 40s, you know, I was just turning 40 and decided, well, it's time to do something new and different. And I had a connection. Our synod had a companion synod connection with the Lutheran Church in El Salvador. And our bishop went to visit, and he basically came back saying, they're looking for lawyers there. He looked at me and another person from the executive committee, said, are you game? I said, yeah, you know, because he said what they're doing is getting church workers out of jail, and that sounded really good to me. But then when I was pursuing that, the whole idea of being called a missionary was a little bit uncomfortable, you know. But then, you know, over time, with the accompaniment, you know, the way we have come to see our mission work in the LCA through accompaniment, I became more comfortable with it. And for a while, I wanted to call myself justice missionary. And that's really what I was, you know, is working in the area of justice. And most of us that are lay people, and as you can see by the statistics that Ann just laid out, you know, with only 30% ordained, you know, it is lay people that are really going into mission. You know, there's lots and lots of opportunities there. Because traditionally we've thought of them as pastors, teachers, and medical workers, but there's lots of other things that we can do in other places where we can serve. And basically, this is how it comes about. We are in a companion relationship with over 70 Lutheran churches in the world. And these churches will talk to the people that work with us in the Division for Global Mission and talk about their needs. And they will ask very specifically for what kind of a person they might be looking for to work within the church. So it's a process of discernment that takes place with the companion church. This is not a situation where we say, oh, well, we think you need this, or well, we have this person here who wants to be, you know, this doctor who wants to serve in your church. It's nothing like that at all. The companion church comes to us to say what their needs are. The job description then is drafted, and then depending on the financial, you know, finances are always a key here, and especially, you know, as the church has had to adjust its budget over time, there's a question as to how many people can get sent. But one of the beautiful things that's happened with the LCA is that we are the only large denomination that has not had to even stop sending missionaries during this whole period of difficulties. The Presbyterians, who had a giant program before, had to even take a year off with sending, but we have continued to be able to send missionaries because of all the great support that's coming from congregations. So what happens? Basically, there is all of the jobs. We have a new process now. All of the requests that come in from all of the companion churches are put together. They're brought to the table. And each one of the program directors for the area will say, this is the kind of job that we're looking for. This church is looking for this kind of a position. And after listening to all the needs, evaluation is made as to which ones are the most critical at this point in time. This year, there was the Central African Republic is in desperate needs of a water specialist. They need somebody who really knows something about water. And so that job, after listening to this the critical nature of that job, turned out to be the number one job. You know, this is people, all of the people that were in the room listened to this and made a decision that carried a top priority. So then all of the positions that are considered to be, that can be funded based upon the numbers that we have, will then be posted in the brochure that we will be passing out to you very shortly. So what happens with you? The first thing is to take a look at the opportunities there.
Which are also on the web.
Right. Which are also always updated. The next step of the process is to get hold of the application, fill out the application, send it in. Then you will be called to Chicago for an interview, unless it's a volunteer job, because volunteers are basically positions that are where the person is looking for their own funding to get there. If you are going for a long-term position or possibly a Global Mission 2, GM2 associate, which is a two-year job, you may be taking a psychological examination. You will then have an opportunity to sit down with the program director and other DGM staff to learn something more about how the Division for Global Mission works. The church will learn about your candidacy, and you may be offered the position to become a missionary. Once that, if you decide that this is the way you're moving and you say yes, there is an orientation process that takes place. It's not a really lengthy process, but it's basically 3 weeks, 2 weeks in an ecumenical orientation with other missionaries being sent by the Presbyterian Church, by the Episcopal Church, by the Volunteer Missionary Movement, and possibly, another group. And then there will be 1 week of ELCA specific orientation where you'll have an opportunity to get together be in Chicago with the other missionaries and learn something, all the things that you need to know about how the mechanics of
insurance
logistics and all that kind of stuff. And then usually for those that go out in the summertime, there is this thing called the Summer Missionary Conference. And that is at the very end of the orientation where you will be able to get together with the returning missionaries and the missionaries on home leave. And it's a very rich opportunity for sharing and getting your questions answered. Having them tell you what do they wish they knew before they left, and helping you along with those kinds of things. So that's kind of how it goes. That word sacrifice was still in there. And people, the strange thing is people came up to me when they finally found out I was going to be a missionary, and they'd say, "Oh, what a great sacrifice, that you're making." And I didn't think it was a sacrifice because I really wanted to do it. But when they said it to me after I was gone, I knew it wasn't a sacrifice because I was absolutely doing what I felt called to do, and I wasn't suffering. I mean, there's still this idea that people are going to hit you with that you're over there, you're over someplace suffering. And there was not any suffering, there was not any major suffering involved. I mean, it was the most incredible thing that I could have ever done. So I would just encourage all of you, to take a look at this and see whether God might be calling you in that direction. Now, you were going to talk about...
Yes, 2 minutes for me, and then we get the job open.
Yes.
I passed some of these out the other night, but these are the annual, this is our kind of annual magazine directory of missionaries, and if you'll just look at a few pages, maybe share them, I'll just tell you about a couple of particular people and their jobs, and then we'll get to the openings now and answer some specific, and tell you about the different categories of jobs, like long-term, short-term. If you look on page 13, for example, Liberia. In Liberia, David Jones, a man in the middle, he's the business administrator of Fiji Hospital, which if you know anything about Liberia, this is a challenging context because Liberia is a country moving out of war and we hope staying out of war. When you're working at some of these hospitals, you are deciding for yourself how stable the peace is because you're seeing a lot. But he is someone who is serving as a business administrator and writes some very good stories for us about his work. On page 23 in Asia, you can see some of our missionaries to the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Japan. The JELC is the group that sponsors the students who are here this month. They are all students at Kumamoto, Japan, where there's a Lutheran university. There are many, many teaching jobs in Japan that I believe are among the best funded, because that's the JELC pays for those, and the salary standard is very comparable to the living cost of living in Japan. I wanted to talk about the Sacks, Carol and James Sack. There's an ordained person. He teaches at seminary and college, and she actually is what you would call a music thanatologist. And Harper Toshin, who was here the other day, would know about this. She plays the harp, and a music thanatologist is sort of like a hospice musician. So she takes her harp around Tokyo and plays for people who are dying in hospice, who in this case are almost always Buddhist. So it's interesting that her job, sort of as an evangelist, is a really unique cross-cultural thing that she does on her own while her husband teaches at the seminary. And then let's just look at Slovakia, which is lots and lots of teachers there, pages 34 and 35, and a little bit on 36. The churches in Eastern Europe, this video obviously was made in Europe, and the Eastern European churches, because they're longtime Lutheran churches whose work was interrupted by communism and socialism, and now they are rebuilding themselves. So they really have a big focus on education, and that's why they want so many teachers. So personally, I've always thought that would sound kind of nice, teach a little English, drink a little latte, go see another country, go to Austria. Just like Stephen and Sarah, every weekend I get a new email. Gosh, where am I here this weekend? Geneva was so close.
But Sarah told you about the Bradways here.
Oh yeah, the Bradways are the parents of Sarah. Mm-hmm.
They really enjoy it, actually. It's been a very good experience as a sort of a, yes, they're at the latter half of their years.
So a lot more exciting than another call.
Yes. At the moment, yes.
4 years or 5 years they've been there?
They were there 1 year, both as teachers in the Lyceum, and then they were back in the U.S. for a year, and then they signed up to go back for 4 years. So it'd be 5 years.
Long term. So yeah. Let's look at, Jerry.
Maybe I missed it, but did you talk about language training? And what happened?
Language training for, yes. Well, we were going to kind of go through category by category, but yes, for people who are going to long-term service, language training is part of it. So there are four new missionaries going out to Senegal this year who just did our summer missionary conference, and they are all heading off to France first to work on French, and then when they move to Senegal, there will be additional training in French and probably Wolof, which is the tribal language there. So a long-term position, it's not a sacrifice, but there's a much bigger investment in terms of education, and the ELCA invests a lot of resources in you and hopes once you learn that language, you'll
be there
a while. So. Otherwise, some of the teaching opportunities, Slovakia, that's an English language high school. I think, have your parents taken any Slovakian lessons?
Only by their own initiative.
Okay.
Yeah.
But to do the job, it's not necessary because the administration of the school is
in English.
Focusing on
there's
English.
Enough other people that have been there long enough that speak English that help them get around, et cetera.
And in the Latin American countries, what's happening is we have a lot of applicants that already speak Spanish. Okay. You know, or people that have some level, and then who, if they decide to do this, do some work on their own to improve their level of language.
So let's pass out the job
options. Okay.
Talk specifically about the different
okay,
categories.
Keep these if you'd like. If you don't want to keep them, put them back when you leave, but you're welcome to take it home. It tells you a lot about what the ELCA is doing
here.
There's
a couple over here. I'm going to send some over here. And then I'm just going to lay, here's some about the, well, actually, here on this side. Several different categories. I'm going to start with the long term first. You know, basically those are the lengthier positions. Those are the people that usually are called for a period of 4 years or more to serve. in any given place. You can see right there on the top, Central African Republic Water Resource Specialist. So you know, that was the top priorities.
On the right panel, long-term.
Oh, gotcha.
Lower.
Okay.
Start at the
end. Okay. You can see that these are the people that will be going for the longest period of time. Although it's something that's after 4 years there's an evaluation period and they may decide to stay or go. Global Mission 2, they're called the GM2 positions. These are people that are go for a period of 2 years. And it's more of a stipend that they receive. You can see what the stipend is on the top, and you can see what's covered, you know, for those kind of positions. In that particular category, you will see we have something posted for Honduras Youth Ministries and Communications. If you look in the Global Mission Annual, there you'll see a picture of Lindsay Mack, who is serving in Honduras right now. And she's had an incredible experience there. She's been doing a lot of youth work, but she has been doing a lot of communications as well. And she has been instrumental in helping the Companion Synod, which is Northwest Lower Michigan, be able to connect better with that church. It's just, she's made an incredible difference through that, and also does youth ministry as part of her work. And these positions are all, you know, one is salary, long-term, those are people on salary. Global Mission 2 are people that are on stipend. Then you have the Global Mission Volunteers. This is for people to raise their own funding. And sometimes it isn't money that they actually, you know, that they actually get assistance sometimes through synods and through other, through their churches. And I can tell you, I started out as a Global Mission Volunteer, and I was really, I was surprised because they asked me to try to think about the Volunteer Missionary Movement was going to sponsor me. They said, just try to raise some money. And all I did was put out my letters to my network, and in 8 months, $12,000 came in. You know, people just were willing. And so I think volunteer positions sometimes scare people a little bit because you feel like, oh, how will I ever get enough money to be able to make this work? But, you know, if you have a network, and you know, people feel your own church and other people will sponsor you. You'll be amazed with the results that you'll see. Then on the back, you will see something about the Young Adults and Global Mission Program. This is a one-year program. It has the age requirements. You have to be between the ages of 19 and 30 to take advantage of this. And we have people serving in all kinds of different contexts.
Here in the village, Gwen Wirtz was there. She was in Kenya for a year, so she served in that program.
We've placed quite a number of people in Argentina. I had an opportunity to visit them. They're doing a lot of youth ministry there, a lot of work in communications. So those have been really exciting placements. The ones you saw something about the United Kingdom placements as well there. So these are all of the different opportunities that are available at this point in time. And as Ann mentioned before, this is continually updated. You can go to the web under ELCA, and you can go under the Division for Global Mission. I think it's Global Mission now. And you will be able to find the
address is correct on the flyer. It says globalmission.org. That's the correct address. And don't forget, I think for people who already live at Holden, the idea that there's a stipend in housing, I think, makes it, in my view, as a former freelancer, practically a job.
And that's sounds like a job.
If there's long-term medical insurance, then what's right. The problem? Right. That's here, that's such an obstacle. But and the stipends, I think, again, you know, when your housing and your insurance are taken care of,
it,
the rest of it goes a long way, unless
now,
you have two mortgages.
Right, and I think now, Stephen, were you going to say something about other opportunities, possibly, or Sarah, with the Lutheran World Federation and how people can get involved?
The jobs we have in Geneva in the ecumenical organizations aren't really through the ELCA. I mean, we got them on our own and we weren't sent through the ELCA, we're paid by those organizations. But what I wanted just to mention, which has sort of become a personal thing with me, is especially for young people, youth, as the ecumenical movement defines them, from the ages of 18 to 30, so it goes quite a bit higher, the age range there. That's the way I sort of worked my way into the jobs that I've had, and it's been a great job that I've had in the ecumenical world. There are very short-term things mainly, and I've sort of become the unofficial person for the LCA to refer people to internships in the ecumenical center, so that's why I just wanted to mention this. There are short-term internships with the Lutheran World Federation in our building, in the Department for Communications. I know that they have interns on a regular basis, journalism students, for example. And then with both the Lutheran World Federation and the World Council of Churches, they have council meetings in various places every several months, various places around the world. And they need stewards to go help out and just get exposure. They purposely employ a group of stewards to come for a week or 3 weeks sometimes to go do sort of the odd jobs, but they really involve them in a program as well to give them exposure to the ecumenical world. And these are really neat opportunities. You may have heard the assembly for the World Council of Churches is coming up in February in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And there's a group of stewards that works for that. And unfortunately, that application process is pretty much taken place. But things like that, I was a steward at the last assembly, and that's largely how I got to work in Geneva. So there are opportunities like that. And if you want, I can give you my card after this, and I can give you some more information from Geneva. You're welcome to email me afterwards, since I've sort of become the unofficial referral person for internships and things like that in Geneva for the LCA. So.
Do they give you housing when you're in Geneva? I mean, how?
Yeah, I mean, for those sort of young people, those opportunities, they oftentimes the church, your church body, so if you're a member of the LCA or, you know, another church, oftentimes your church body, if you're a North American especially, will pay your way to go. They sort of expect that of Americans to go to Geneva or to wherever the LWF council meeting is, for example. So usually your church will cover that, and they'll cover housing and dormitories and meals because they, you know, they intentionally want to involve young people in a specific way, in an intentional way, in a program like that. So it's not something that you have to go raise your own money for, usually.
Well, I'm going to just take the last 15 minutes of our session to talk a little bit about other opportunities to be involved. Now, we talked about becoming a missionary, volunteer, doing some kind of short-term or long-term service. But the experience of getting connected globally is really rich. And we are very fortunate in the LCA to have, through the Division for Global Mission, a companion synod program. That means that no matter where you are living, with the possible exception of Alaska. That considers itself its own mission, you have the opportunity to be connected with the Global Mission or Companion Synod Committee in your synod that is connected someplace in the world. And I didn't make copies of this list, but this, if you don't, if some of you don't know where your companion synod is or who your synod is connected with in the world, take a look at this list, you know, and you can see. These committees provide opportunities to get to know a particular Lutheran church in the world and to walk with this church. These relationships, some of them are very new and being created right now. In fact, I don't know how many of you have met Pastor Amy, who is walking around here, who is living in North Carolina, but she's going to get in on the ground floor of the very, very new relationship that the North Carolina Synod is developing with ILCO, the Lutheran Church in Costa Rica. And so she's excited about using her Spanish and being able to get in on that. And some other relationships are very long-term. The relationship, for example, that brought me to El Salvador was through the Lutheran Church of El Salvador. We've had a relationship with the Milwaukee Synod since 1988. So this is a very long period of time to be able to continue. And what you find through this is with the deepening of the relationships, you get to know the people even more and the church more. And there really is a richness that results as, you know, from that kind of a relationship. So I would encourage you, if you don't feel at this moment that you can connect yourself globally by going into some kind of international service, to look into the companion relationships that your synod might have and see whether you can be involved in that way. We also wanted to just sort of touch on delegations and short-term mission trips. How many people in this room have gone on any kind of delegation or mission trip? Okay, we've got a few people here. Okay.
I did companions in it half the time. Whole half the time.
Okay, that's great. There are all kinds of opportunities in the world to get connected through short-term delegations. In fact, I'm getting a call, probably at least a couple calls a week, from churches saying, we would like to go to a given place, you know, in Latin America and get connected. How can we do that? First of all, when they say Latin America, the first thing I always say to them is consider the Lutheran Center in Mexico City. I don't know how many of you know about this, but we have a place in Mexico City. We have a couple ELCA missionaries that are called to help direct this program that will give delegations, short-term delegations, a real experience of what it's like to live in Latin America by going to Mexico. They have a beautiful facility right next to the seminary there where their housing is provided, and they have cooks on staff, and they will arrange the opportunity to get to know the Latin America culture, specifically Mexico, in that place. They have connections with community groups, community development agencies, with a lot of church groups, with labor, with agriculture, and it's an opportunity to really learn something about the context. I mean, there's a lot of people that call up and say, we want to help. You know, that's the first thing. We had a long discussion about that this morning. Maybe some of you saw some of the things that were written up there about the kinds of assumptions that we kind of take with us. And I always say, well, the first thing is you need to understand to do before you think you can help, is you need to be able to understand people and understand the culture. So one place to begin is Mexico City as an opportunity. And we have some new resources available too. So if your congregation is thinking about taking a mission trip, there is a new book that's been produced with the Division for Global Mission and World Hunger called Welcome Forward. It's a small, comes with a CD of music as well, but it has all kinds of information in here about getting ready to take this kind of a trip and reflecting on what you're learning as a result of this. There are some congregations, take a look at this, St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Whittier, California, that before they take any kind of a mission trip, they put together their own book that has not only, it's their handbook, that has not only the information about what they're doing in the beginning, but it has the songs that they might be singing, songs that there are that they know that their companion church sings, and songs that they might be singing at their own church, and spaces in the back for journaling, and the reflection questions every day, you know, for people who want to reflect. So there are lots of different resources to make mission trips a better experience as well. So I don't know, maybe we can just open this up for questions now? On anything. Go ahead.
I had a question just about young adults in global mission. It says, the bullet points, one says travel, lodging, board insurance, all of these things provided, and then it says volunteers raise minimum of $3,500 for support. I'm just wondering if that means that the young adult who goes has to fundraise themselves that money and what that money goes towards, or how that works.
Basically, it goes to defray part of the cost for their placement. So yes. You know, what they would ask you to do is to, you know, write a letter to your friends and your churches and your network and ask them to contribute towards your support. And it's, they say a minimum of $3,500. And I don't know, I mean, if you came up with, you know, something in that neighborhood, they wouldn't say no, you know, you didn't quite make it. But usually what happens is people will end up with more than that. And the result of that is that then there are more volunteers that are able to be placed as a result of that.
They're creating kind of a fund that will be able to pay for some young people who aren't able to raise all that. So it's basically you're assisting with the subsidy, but the cost of your year is about $12,000 to $15,000, and so you're paying a portion of it. This was developed as a faith-based alternative to the Peace Corps, because you know, a lot of people graduate from college, they want to serve, and the Peace Corps is where to go because the church volunteer programs are not as well articulated, but this one, there's about 40 people a year who do this. And I think for this basically is a leadership training program for the ELCA, because what this is doing is creating
church leaders,
globally literate potential leaders for our church and for our towns. So in that sense, it's, yes, you're doing work while you're there, but really will benefit when you come back.
Well, the amazing thing is that when you talk to the young adults that come back and the people that went that have gone on GM2 positions, the Global Mission 2, many have found that when after the two-year service that their career paths have changed. There are a number of people that have decided to go into the ministry as a result of this, surprisingly. There are other people that have used this to clarify what they might want to do in terms of getting degrees, other degrees, you know, in social work or other related occupations from what they have. You heard about one woman saying that now she's decided she's going to become a teacher. So this it really does help you clarify, you know, your future plans, at least for younger people.
When looking at the internet site, the website, it seemed as though the ESOL, all the ESOL positions required BAs. And I wondered if that is true and if that's an ELCA, a Global Mission requirement, or a local church, a local church requirement, because it's in a school setting or a university setting or whatever. Or is it? Or am I mistaken?
Which, the East, you said?
The ESOL.
The ESOL? Yeah. Okay.
Or any English teaching, yeah. Which it seems like we all would be reasonably reasonably qualified or trainable to do.
I think that the BA is necessary in most cases, but sometimes, but teaching certificates and ESL background in teaching isn't always needed, because the Slovakia program, Japan, there is a lot of support for you. So even if you haven't taught before, you can do it.
Right. But what about if you've taught ESOL but you don't have the BA, which is my position, my situation. I've taught ESOL in the United States.
I would think that after a certain point, experience counts. But
I'm with you, anyone with a lot of experience.
It's worth it to ask that question.
Okay.
Because if you bring a lot else from your life, then I.
That's what I was wondering. If it was a requirement because you were teaching in a school where you would hope they would have some standards for their teachers, like having a degree. Maybe, I said I didn't quite know.
And the companion churches do, have their requirements. So in some cases they might say no for this position, but for another one they might say yes. Any other questions?
I'm always amazed by the whole world of people who work internationally. I mean, that we do have long-term missionaries who come back in 8 or 10 years and they say, well, now where can you send me?
Right.
So we have some people who just moved, they spent years and years in Papua New Guinea, and now they're going to go to Central African Republic. There's a pastor in Guyana who was in Africa for many years before. Just it's sort of, you kind of get hooked, I think. And it's a big one. You probably see all these international people all the time in Geneva, people who sort of,
And the regional representatives
working globally through the church as opposed to through a government.
Regional representatives of in Senegal are now moving to Egypt and taking an entirely different job.
Question about the positions listed and whether the people that end up filling them generally have worked in those positions and are well trained in, say, an English teacher or. I would jump into the job of a finance trainer or something like that. But how much
specific training?
How specific is the training necessary for a lot of these positions, and how much training would the ELCA provide?
Well, for like the ESL positions, there's a course. Yep. They will teach you how to do that, so you don't need to do that. It would depend on your prior experience in terms of administration. You know, there are a lot of people that end up going for jobs in administration that didn't have a business degree or anything like that. I mean, so what happens is they will look at the total picture, and a decision will be made as to the match. You know, based upon your own personal characteristics, you might have done a lot of different volunteer work where you built up your ability to do certain things, and so. They would accept you based upon that. And also language ability too, you know, look at that. Well, I wanted to just end this with reading just a couple paragraphs from this book. We put this in the bookstore called Light Grains of Wheat, A Spirituality of Solidarity. This is really an excellent book because it is about people who served in Central America, but from all the different countries in Central America. And this covers people who served for long experiences. And it also talks about people who just took delegation experiences over a period of time and had sister parish relationships. And I just think it really sums up, you know, what this is all about. Commitment. A giving over of self in love and trust to a greater cause, a working in harmony for something that is extremely important, is an essential prelude to a life that has meaning. When one steps away from what kills the spirit towards something one believes in passionately, space is open within us for the spirit to come rushing in. We have, the missionary community and solidarity community, said over and over, a new sense of the fullness of life. From the experience of being open, of letting go of possessions, power, and control, of making new connections with suffering people, we are discovering who we really are, who we are meant to be. I think all of us who've had any kind of global experience knows that this is true. And our prayer for you is that as you take this with you and these materials, that you are able to discern where your place is in God's world and in the world globally today. Go in peace. Serve the Lord.
Thank you, Lisa.
Outside U.S. borders.